This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Shoppers are coming into stores again. Well, certain kinds of stores.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, our look at business and the economy just as Wall Street begins its trading day. This morning, a high-end store said its customers are shopping again, but across the street, it is a different story. That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Way down. The Dow is off 184 points already at 10,259, and the NASDAQ, S&P 500, all doing the same thing, down more than 2%. This morning, the government said more Americans filed new claims for unemployment benefits last week, and that is a reversal from the last several weeks. Stocks are down in Europe and Asia, too. Let's say good morning to Chief Economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Chicago. Hello.
Good morning.
I want to talk retail sales in a moment, Diane, but stocks way down this morning. I mentioned unemployment benefit claims rose. They're supposed to be falling, aren't they?
You know, it really underscores the fragility of the recovery. Many people who thought they'd never have to apply for unemployment insurance because they had a good severance are now finding they've been unemployed long enough, they actually have to apply. So this has been a very difficult, fragile recovery. We are in a recovery. We're generating jobs, but just not enough to accommodate everyone who needs one.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this morning, a shishi store, Williams-Sonoma, reported higher profits, but Sears said profits were down. Walmart and TJ Maxx gave disappointing forecasts this week. Diane, are we splitting even more into haves and have-nots now?
No, we're really continuing a trend that started before the recession began and precipitated the overhang of debt. What we did is took on a lot of credit in order to compensate for the fact we didn't have income, and now we don't have that credit anymore, and it's showing up in retail sales. Those who have money can spend. Those who don't can't leverage up anymore to spend.
Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In Greenville, Ohio, last year, residents blocked a project to bury carbon emissions underneath their town. Well, the company that proposed that project is trying to learn lessons from that defeat. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner has part two of our series on NIMBY, not under my backyard.
The mayor of Greenville, Ohio, wasn't initially opposed to burying carbon emissions miles beneath his hometown. If it worked with CO2 from the local ethanol plant, then it might work to bury emissions from plants that burn coal. But after months of phone calls and protests over a government-backed sequestration project, Mike Bowers made up his mind.
Ultimately, you do need to listen to your constituency. It's always better safe than sorry. If it's an unproven science, then it's just that, an unproven science.
Those words no doubt grate on Chuck McConnell at Battelle. That's the R&D lab that led the Greenville project. McConnell says for decades, petroleum companies have injected CO2 underground to help squeeze out hard-to-reach oil. And burying carbon emissions off Norway's coast has proceeded safely since the mid-90s.
I'm not going to suggest that anybody's concerns shouldn't be addressed. But we can't spend the next 5 or 10 years talking about it.
That's because, he says, time to contain global warming is running out. He says sequestration is a catch-22. The demonstration projects are aimed partly at building public trust, but developers can't build public trust if they can't get local approval to demonstrate the technology. Battelle will move its demonstration project, but McConnell wouldn't say where. But this time, he says, Battelle will engage residents more, clearly explain the science, and call its plan something else.
You don't declare it as a project. You declare it as a development.
European sequestration efforts are running into opposition, too. Protesters in Europe were among the first to congratulate activists in Greenville when Battelle scrapped its project there. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And tomorrow, Sarah will look at the strange bedfellows in the debate over carbon sequestration. This is the Morning Report for Thursday, May 20th at Marketplace.org. All this week, there have been hearings on Capitol Hill about BP's oil spill. Today, though, a different kind of energy company is in the spotlight. The head of Massey Energy is testifying to Congress. It was Massey's West Virginia coal mine where 29 people died in an explosion last month. Marketplace's Elisa Roth says although there will be tough questions about mine safety, the coal industry will survive.
For all the talk about alternative energy sources, wind, solar, you name it, the U.S. and the rest of the world still depend on coal. A lot. Ellen Smith is the owner and managing editor of Mine Safety and Health News.
Coal's not going anywhere anytime soon or maybe forever.
Or she says, more to the point, coal is going everywhere. Half the energy we use in the U.S. comes from coal-fired power plants. And both India and China are also big burners.
We can make these alternative energy choices here in the United States. But the only way for us not to mine coal is for coal to literally be outlawed.
And because the only way to mine coal is with people, no matter what happens, you still need mine workers. Smith says expect lots of discussions about enforcement and mine worker safety at today's hearing. And like with the BP oil spill, lots of questions about links between regulators and the industry. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In Greece today, thousands of demonstrators marched in central Athens protesting government spending cuts meant to reduce the budget deficit. Some economists warn that the Greek debt crisis is a contagion and it might pull the United States back into recession. But Marketplace's economics correspondent Chris Farrell is not that worried. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, Bill.
What makes you so carefree?
Well, I'm not carefree. But look, the troubles in Europe could give added momentum to the U.S. recovery. So long as we avoid a financial contagion, foreign investors are looking for safety, and that means they're snapping up U.S. treasuries, which is keeping our interest rates low. That seems to me like a pretty good scenario.
Okay, so Europe is making us look safe and like quality. But isn't Greece at least a warning to us, Chris, that government debt really matters, and we've got a lot of debt in this country, public and private?
Well, Bill, global investors are saying the U.S. is nothing like Greece. It's the opposite of Greece. The fear, the concern, it's farther down the road. You know, basically, I think economic growth in the U.S. and Asia will continue to pull the global economy out of the doldrums. In Europe, they're going to get their fiscal house in order. That's what they're going to focus on. Now, eventually, our turn will come, but just not yet.
A temporarily sanguine economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Facebook is expected to deliver a mea culpa of sorts. The social network has made a number of changes to its privacy policy, allowing it to share users' information. As Janet Babin reports, it seems a lot of those users are waiting for an explanation.
Syracuse University grad student Anastasia Kilobradova spends her time researching new media. But even she didn't catch Facebook's recent privacy changes right away. She was automatically opted in to the Instant Personalization Program. It's where Facebook shares your preferences with companies Yelp, Pandora, and Microsoft without permission.
I never selected that I would share my information with those people. I had to go back and unshare, and I don't know how long my information was shared with Facebook's select partners.
The feature's just the latest example of Facebook pushing the privacy envelope, and many users complain they can't figure out how to opt out of sharing their information. Software engineer Matt Pizzamenti even designed a website to help users navigate Facebook's privacy settings.
It's just an easy scan that you can run on your Facebook account, and it will go through and let you know if you're exposed or not.
The website's called ReclaimPrivacy.org. Pizzamenti says it's had several hundred thousand hits since it went online last Friday. In a statement, Facebook said it's listening to feedback and evaluating the best way to respond to concerns. The uproar has Facebook in a bind, though. It doesn't want to lose users, but it doesn't want to lose revenue from sharing users' information. Jeff Chester is with the Center for Digital Democracy.
Facebook doesn't really care about the privacy of its members. This is all about a battle over the future of online advertising.
The more data that Facebook mines, the more information it can sell to companies eager to friend us. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Today, the fight against an invasive fish continues in Illinois. The federal government has given that state $78 million to stop the Asian carp. A lot of people fear that that fish could wipe out the Great Lakes fishing industry if it reaches Lake Michigan. Tony Arnold has our story.
Good old-fashioned nets haven't stopped the fish. Neither have electrical barriers submerged in water. So today, for the second time, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources will dump chemicals into an Illinois river that should kill all fish in a two-mile stretch. Chris McLeod is a department spokesman.
We need to find out what the population is and how big of a problem it may or may not be.
The worry is the carp will take over Lake Michigan and beyond. The fish has caused a battle between Illinois and other Great Lakes states that fear the carp would ruin the region's roughly $7 billion sport fishing industry. Joy Yearout is with Michigan's Attorney General's office. She says today's chemical dump doesn't go far enough.
It's good, but it's not comprehensive. There are so many more basic short-term steps that we could be taking to address Asian carp.
Michigan's Attorney General has tried to force Illinois to close waterways leading into Lake Michigan. But Chicago business groups say if that happens, it would halt billions of dollars of goods now shipped on the waterways. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
Tomorrow, an aquarium in Long Beach, California, plans to open a new sea otter exhibit. Cute furry animals that kids love? What could go wrong? Well, the exhibit's sponsor is BP, the company trying to clean up one of the largest oil spills in U.S. history. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz takes a look at what happens when a sponsor becomes a potential PR nightmare.
The BP Sea Otter Habitat probably sounded like a great name a month ago, but dead, oil-drenched sea otters have become symbols for the horrors of past spills, making the unveiling of this exhibit an apparent case of terrible timing.
Well, we're certainly getting some press. We'll have to wait and see whether it's good or bad.
That's Aquarium of the Pacific president, Jerry Schubel. Nonprofits who take funding from less-than-popular donors should tackle the problem head-on, says Melanie Lockwood-Herman of the Nonprofit Crisis Management Center.
More than being a PR disaster for this particular institution, I think this is going to draw attention to the work that it does.
And that's exactly how the aquarium's Schubel plays it when I ask him if he worries about how his otter exhibit might be tainted, so to speak, by BP's oil spill.
I worry more about how can we get society to think about how we're going to deal with these issues. That is something our aquarium is committed to. And getting off of our addiction to oil is part of that story.
Just don't tell BP he said that. I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And finally, organizers of the 2012 London Olympics have unveiled the game's official mascot. They considered going with British icons like Big Ben or a Trafalgar Square pigeon or an animated teapot. Instead, they chose a kind of Teletubby creature with one unblinking eye. It's supposed to make you think of the webcam generation and not the fact that London is covered with surveillance cameras that follow your every move. You can see that Olympic mascot at our website, marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us.
Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.